Welcome to episode 3 of the No Shot Clock podcast. This is Michael Bryan from the Sun-Times, and I'm here with Joe Henriksen. Before we get started this week, I just wanted to let everybody know that we've got some pretty big, exciting news. The podcast is in the iTunes store now, so you can just search for No Shot Clock in the iTunes store, and you can subscribe. If you could do us a favor and, you know, at least rate it, hopefully review it. We'd like to get some of those on there to encourage some other people to listen. It's also available on Stitcher. If you know what that is, you'll be really happy. I know a lot of people use that to listen to podcasts. You can just search for us under No Shot Clock on Stitcher as well. So there's a couple different ways to find us now, and it should be a lot easier to listen to us on the go. But anyway, Joe, we can get started. Get right into it here. The Chicago Elite Classic was this weekend, and I think first we're going to go back and forth, talk a little bit about some things that jumped out on you. If you want to go ahead and give us your first, you can kick it off, Joe.
Yeah, after spending 2 days and the countless hours that we spent, there is no better place to start the Chicago Elite Classic. And I guess real quick, I know we've talked about Simeon quite a great deal in the first 2 weeks of the podcast. And real quick, you never know what to expect in a first game, Mike. And I really thought Simeon impressed. I thought they had a different look to him in terms of getting up and down the floor a little bit more. Playing a little bit more open style. I know Rob Smith believes his guard play is going to be much improved this year, and I think he's going to try to ride that here in the early going to see how far he can let them push it. But I was just really impressed with how good they played for a first game on the big stage. Now, they have a lot of returning players, of course, but even some of the guys that, you know, are kind of, well, I'll take Kizo Brown, the freshman, off the bat. I mean, he didn't put up eye-popping numbers or anything, but here's a freshman, valued freshman, who I thought handled himself, was poised at ease, contributed, and did the things I have seen him do in the offseason, and kind of stepped in and is going to play a big role. But overall, you know, DJ Williams was kind of DJ Williams. Zach Norvell really stepped up. I mean, I think he's going to make that natural progression that you see from a sophomore to a junior, which will be huge for Simeon. And then, of course, probably the player of the weekend, I think, was Ed Morrow, among Chicago area players. He's just, you just know what you're going to get with him. And I just love his mentality he brings to the floor, and his athleticism, his toughness, junkyard dog mentality. He had some electric eye-opening dunks in the transition. Even in the half court, he fouled out Elijah Thomas on a fifth foul on a dunk. So I was just overall really impressed with the look of Simeon for a first game.
No doubt. I mean, they came out. God, it's fun to see them run. You know, they came out running, and that was great. And really, sometimes basketball is not super difficult. You can sum up last year's Simeon problems. Obviously, they had a good season, but not up to their expectations. But it's real simple. No one could shoot. They could not make a three-pointer on any consistent basis to save their life. And it just really kept them from achieving what they wanted to achieve. And you look at this game, Zach Norvell, it's the first thing he did. He had a three to start the game. He was 3 for 4. Moss was 1 for 2. As simple as it sounds, if Simeon can hit 4 three-pointers in a game, in every game this year, they won't lose. I mean, I really think it's that simple. If they get consistent outside shooting like that, you can't beat them on the boards. You know, they're a good defensive team. They just need just average, capable outside shooting, and they're going to be fine. We saw what they looked like with that. So, yeah, there's no doubt. I give serious thought. I thought Simeon looked better than Stevenson in the debut games that I saw. So I gave serious thought to even moving Simeon right up to number one.
Coming to my side of things, okay.
Yeah, I got to say that definitely. No, I
mean, it's still early, and all the things you just said are, I mean, even DJ Williams, he didn't take many shots, but he hit that, you know, 16, 17-foot jumper, and it looked smooth doing it. So, they can, and then you just got Ed Morrow just cleaning up everything, and that's what I think. And you mentioned it for our first podcast when you mentioned him as a Player of the Year candidate, and I kind of, I omitted that possibility, and you really think about it. Look at the matchup problem Ed Morrow is going to cause for teams in the Red South and as well as in Class 4A. It's a hard matchup. There's not very many big men, and as active and athletic and energetic as he plays, that's a huge matchup problem for high school basketball teams in Illinois going forward.
Ed Morrow, I mean, I watched what he did last year against Jahlil Okafor and Cliff Alexander, and he might be undersized. Boy, he held his own. And I'm supposed to believe that high major colleges don't have a spot for Ed Morrow? I saw what he did against the best of the best big men. And now those guys are gone, so of course he's going to tear it up. And if I'm an Illini fan, I'm watching the Chicago Elite Classic, and I'm watching Glenn Watson, and I'm watching Ed Morrow, two kids that Illinois didn't want and didn't offer, and they're the two best locals in the event, to me, bar none. And I'm wondering what is going on there, and that really wouldn't please me, especially after watching the two guys that were heading to Illinois and their kind of mixed bag performances. But we can get more into that later. But yeah, Ed Morrow, there's no doubt he's a Player of the Year candidate. He was a candidate last year. If you'd have voted, you know, five guys, he might have wound up five or six. He was that good last year. To me, he's basically Roger Powell's mentality, but he's an even better athlete, except he has absolutely no shooting range whatsoever.
And the other team that really impressed on Friday night was St. Joseph. I know we talked about them too, so we won't go into great detail, but when Nick Rakosevic is playing at an extremely high level, they're a different team. I mean, we just talked about Ed Morrow being a matchup nightmare. Well, Nick Rakosevic is very similar. When he's playing at that level with that type of energy and impact, he's just difficult to play against at the high school level. He was facing up, getting to the basket. That was the best I've seen him play this year so far. And then, of course, Glenn Watson is just rock steady. And he kind of really pushes the other team on both ends of the floor. I mean, he puts pressure on you. And Glenn Watson is just ignites that team. And I was just impressed with how St. Joe's just kind of dismantled Redondo Union out of California.
Yeah, that's another one that to me is a little bit simple. When Jordan Ash make shots, St. Joseph's is just really, really difficult to beat. I mean, mm-hmm. You know what you're going to get from the others. Ash's shot is coming along nice. That was one of the better games I'd seen him play. Rakosevic was solid and played that well in the last game I saw at St. Joe's. That's why I was so excited about them going into the year. But Glenn Watson, I mean, you want to talk about a point guard. I've never seen anybody steal the ball from him. I mean, he has some of the best handles I've ever covered. It's just that he's rock solid with the ball, and it's such an important thing for a high school basketball team. Yeah, St. Joe's definitely can win 3A. They proved it again to me at the Chicago Elite Classic, so that was fun. One team that I was kind of puzzled by, well, I was puzzled by two teams, but one of them was Bogan, which, I mean, wow, biggest win in school history. The kids were over the moon about it after the game. You know, it was easy to be really happy for them. But I thought they played really weird. I saw a lot of Bogan last year, probably 10 or 15 games, and it wasn't the team I saw a year older, which is what I expected. They really, the passing wasn't real fluid. I mean, I think only one or two baskets were even assisted in the first half. Then Pipkins was out for a long time for kind of an unknown sort of reason. It was a little strange. They managed to get the win anyway, which is credit to them. I'm thinking maybe the spotlight maybe made things a little weird. The bigger college court they're not used to playing on. So there are some excuses, but I maybe, despite a big win over Lone Peak, I expected maybe to see a little bit more dynamic performance from Bogan.
I thought they played poor. Just, I thought it was a bad game and a bad night for them, and don't expect that in the future. But what you just said and what I wrote about earlier when I recapped the event, I'm just impressed that they came out with a win against a quality team while playing poorly. And Luan Pipkins, I thought, was nowhere near what we've seen him play and really struggled. You know, he impacted the game defensively, but he had problems taking care of the ball. He didn't shoot it very well. He didn't score a whole lot of points, which he is a scorer. But again, as we said, Bogan came out of there with a win while playing poorly. Luan Pipkins came back and hit the shot of the game, a three-pointer to basically win the game, even after a struggling night. So, you know, I kind of think you just kind of take it with a grain of salt what you saw that particular night. But, yeah, you're right. It was not the type of performance from a team that we expect to challenge for a 3A title. I don't know. The environment, they've been tested, which is why I was a little disappointed. You know, Simeon's first game, Bogan played some high-quality games out in Rock Island, so that's why I came away a little unimpressed, more so than I would have if it was even their first game.
Yeah, I think Bogan, like a lot of teams, they feed off their atmosphere. They're proud of their gym and what a just a horrible place that is for people to play. And frankly, it's kind of a horrible place to watch a game. It's uncomfortable. It's loud. It's bad. And they love it. And they're really comfortable in that small, tight environment. We've seen that with some Marshall teams in the past. And they kind of like to overwhelm you with their speed in there. And I think it's difficult to translate that to a, you know, two half full big college court arena with a bunch of people observing and no one cheering at all.
And so, that's what I think that hampered Whitney Young. I mean, Whitney Young is this inexperienced team with nobody back really except for Rodney Harrington. And, you know, they put themselves in a spot where you're playing at a big stage against a pretty good opponent and without any games under their belt. And for a young team like that, it showed. They struggled, turned the ball over. I think Tyrone Slaughter's quote to you in your story pretty much nailed it. You miss 19 free throws, you're not going to win. So, but you know, I think it's a wait and see with those guys. They're young, very inexperienced, and we'll kind of have to wait and see with their development as individual players and as a team.
Yeah, that was a weird one. I was writing during the first half of it, so I didn't get to pay very close attention. All those games backed up, it kind of gets tough, and you got to eventually just say, I'm going to write these stories and not watch. So I did that during the first half of the game, and then I watched the second half real close, and I'm very confused. I don't know what kind of team they want to be. I have no clue what kind of team they are now. It's going to take a lot more of watching Young for me to kind of figure that out. Anthony Mosley said something to me after the game. Was talking about how it was an off-the-court loss, not an on-the-court loss. So I don't know if there's things going on in that camp or what's happening really, but things were definitely pretty much wrong around Young on that day, as they were around Rita. I don't know how much we want to get into the St. Rita performance. It's not really worth talking about. It was bad.
It was really – that was the low light of the event, actually. I mean, plain and simple. We've seen Rita real quick. We've seen Rita just – have some lemons, and that's what I really want to see them avoid this year with the experience they have. I mean, I've used the inexperience in the past as a crutch, but they've got seniors that have been here 3-4 years, and you know, it was a debacle. I mean, it was just a rout and a poorly played game, and you know, I hope it's just out of their system, but it was bad. You know, in that game, though, I will say the absolute highlight for me, and I focus on in-state teams and in-state players, but my goodness, was Raul Alkins, the kid out of Christ the King, phenomenal. I mean, it was a big time. I'm talking big time individual performance that gets you excited about high school, seeing high school players. I mean, he is a top 30 player in the country, but boy, I mean, I don't focus on out-of-state players and national stuff, but, boy, there's 25 players better than that kid in that class, which I don't think there are, but he didn't play in any high-profile AAU program in the offseason, so I think his stock is ready to soar, if that's any indication, but that kid was special.
Yeah, wow, I didn't know he didn't play at a high-profile AAU program. That's crazy. Yeah, he was amazing. That was and he kind of did everything in every different way, from crazy athletic dunks. You know, he showed he could shoot. He had actual skills. Yeah, it was definitely – he lived up to the stage. Unlike a lot of our local stars, he really grabbed it, as did Frank Jackson, the Bogan kid. The Lone Peak player against Bogan. I thought he played really well, too. He's kind of a deceptively good player. He was a lot of fun to watch.
And that kind of I'm going to segue a little bit, Mike, into just real quick, the national events, the national shootout being played in Chicago. The Chicago Elite Classic's been around now for 3 years, and I do think that it's been established now as kind of a brand. People are talking about it. People are aware of it. But the question is the Chicago market, the Chicago high school basketball fan, are they intrigued? Does it pique their interest when you bring in national teams? Now, I will say this group of teams and players wasn't quite what we've seen the last couple years in the event. It just wasn't quite as a high a level. I mean, we've had some monster individual players out of state and teams. Remember the Lone Peak team was a national championship team 2 years ago. Stanley Johnson, he was from Modern Day, which is one of the highest profile programs in the country, was here. And I still have always questioned whether Chicago fans fully embrace out-of-state teams and programs in terms of I want to go see them.
Joe, it's not even a question. I mean, it's been answered. No. I mean, they don't care about it. They don't want to see it. We've seen it with the crowds. There's just, frankly, I don't care about it, to be honest. I would have rather been at Larkin, you know, at the Mac Irvin Diabetes Classic, watching Proviso East and Viator and Morgan Park and Larkin. I mean, we wait all year to see our teams play each other, to see who's the best. And then one of the big events, one of the two-day big weekends, is these teams against teams we really don't care about at all. And it just totally leaves me flat. I have no interest in it. The only time I've ever seen the area have an interest in it, and I mean ever.
Greg Oden?
Yeah. And I'm not even sure it was Oden. That might have been
Shire.
Yeah. I think it was 80% Shire.
I think it was just a unique situation. I think it's a combination. Now we look at Greg Oden as this wasted talent of that amounted to nothing. But at that time, oh man, Greg Oden was just the talk. So, you know, and Lawrence North was in Indianapolis, and they had Mike Conley. So, I mean, it was just a unique situation. Glenbrook North, John Shire, and those of you that are listening here, I mean, it was a shootout at at Northwestern. And those two faced off in a February game and sold the gym out, 8,000-9,000 people. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you can somehow get – but I've seen teams from Milwaukee come into Illinois with no crowds, high profile, a team from Indiana in the past. You're not going to get any better than the last 2 years what the Chicago League Classic has done as far as talent with Modern Day and Bishop Gorman and the Lone Peak team. So – you're right. I mean, the fans are so embraced with Illinois high school basketball. I just don't think they can relate too well to the out-of-state program and out-of-state team. So we'll see the direction of that event, as well as, you know, if they can get more of these rivalry. I mean, the Oak Park Fenwick game, if you walked into that first game of the Chicago League Classic, it was probably the best atmosphere of the whole weekend, to be honest with you, because of the crowds and what you think of high school basketball, which are student sections, rivalry, and those types of things. And that's what, you know, that's what I love about high school basketball, just as you're talking too.
I mean, I watched Kenwood and King tonight. It was amazing. That gym was rocking. We had students on both sides. It was intense. It was packed. People were cheering. No one wants to go to a sporting event where no one cheers. That's what
it is tough, man. Atmosphere is part of high school basketball, and the big stage and the bigger arena is cool, but you do want to see, I don't know, there is a small percentage of people that do love that type of basketball, but I think the majority of Chicago high school basketball fans would rather see the local teams square off with one another.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we wind up most seasons with matchups we wish we'd seen, and because they don't materialize for various reasons. So we need to, I think, take these events we have and try to make those happen, and not try and force people to care about things they don't. But anyway,
there's a rundown, Mike, of some things I wanted to get to. We'll touch on them here just for a few minutes. The first one is the Morgan Park route. Charlie Moore's 49 points. You and I talked already about a little bit. We'll disagree a little bit on how that went down. And I will say, in fairness, to any type of these games, a lot of times it does matter if you're in the gym and you witness the flow of the game and the substitute patterns. I wasn't there. But I saw the scores. I think I saw your tweet. Was it 50-9 at one point?
Probably. Yeah, I think
56-9.
Yeah, it was
bad. Okay, yeah. Now, I wasn't there. But Charlie Moore scoring 49 points doesn't do it for me, man. When it's 110-30, come on.
It was awesome.
I don't care about a 49-point game in that game. I'll be more impressed with Marcus Levet scoring 32 or 33 against Larkin.
Joe, he made 9 3-pointers. 9. And most of them were from well beyond NBA range. He was pulling up from wherever he wanted and hitting a 3. It was amazing. He had like 24 or 26 points in the first quarter. It was great. It was fun. The Urban Prep Bronzeville kids had fun. And to their credit, I mean, they really deserve credit. They played every minute of that game like it was the city title. It was
good for them.
Unbelievable how hard they played. And it was a fun event for everybody. And, you know, I literally found out about that game at like 8:30 in the morning. it was scheduled the day of. They knew exactly what they were getting into. They knew it was about to happen. And they seemed pretty excited to take part in it. So I don't think there's anything to be too upset about.
I just don't see the value in it. If a team chooses to be beaten like a drum and like it, as you say, I guess that's their choice. But in general, the majority of the time, that stuff doesn't happen. I mean, it just doesn't.
Maybe not, but even from a Morgan Park viewpoint, I mean, the Irvins, you got it. They're marketing geniuses. We're sitting here talking about their game against Urban Prep Bronzeville because Charlie Moritz scored 49 points.
I find Morgan Park highly entertaining. I think most people do. And Nick Irvin's program, and that's what it's about, and for years. And then they have followed it up the last 2 years with two state championships, which it kind of quiets, I think, some critics because now they're getting it done. But, you know, it's an entertaining style of basketball they play. There's no disrespect to that at all.
No, and we can skip right ahead to another thing you wanted to talk about because it's going to dovetail into this. Maine South basketball.
The opposite of yes. Morgan Park?
Exactly. I also had to watch that last week.
Now, it's an acquired taste. First of all, though, I give Coach Laverato unbelievable credit for what he's done with the program and instilling the style and the system and the patience in the program and has stuck to it. Because that's why they succeed. That's why they win 23, 24 games every year.
It's impressive. No, I really tried after the game to maybe get one of the players to just admit that sometimes he wants to pull up and chuck a three because he's just kind of tired of this. They were not having it. The system is what they want to talk about. They believe in the system. I mean, no, seriously. Tony Laverato, wow, I don't know how he gets a bunch of teenagers.
Exactly.
To do this.
Get high school kids on board with that. I mean, you know, and their scores are low. It's just not the most. It's not the prettiest basketball, but it is certainly effective. Real quick, the Joliet schools, back your way. Joliet West is 5-1. Joliet Central is 6-0. You buying or selling?
Buying on the Steelmen. It's the greatest program in basketball history, in the greatest gym in basketball history. So obviously they're undefeated. I'm only mildly joking about that, but no, the win over Bolingbrook, they should have beat Bolingbrook last year. I was at that game. Joliet Central lost a couple of key seniors. I didn't expect them to be quite so good, but the win over Bolingbrook proves it to me. They're going to be solid. They're going to be a really good above-average team. West, no. They lost to Plainfield North by 26 points.
Mm-hmm. They don't have any real quality wins.
No, and they're coming off the worst season in school history.
They do have some young players in the program. I will say that. They have some young players in the program that are coming along. But I don't care about Joliet basketball like you do, obviously. But when Joliet basketball is better, high school basketball is better. When East Aurora basketball is better, high school basketball is better. When Peoria basketball is better. Some of these towns have really suffered. Now, West Aurora has kind of kept rolling, but for the most part. But, you know, the Auroras and the Joliets and the Peorias, I just like to see when those schools in those towns are flourishing. It just makes high school basketball better.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The two Joliet West sophomores, it's Trevian Bell, he's a 6'5 guy, and then Tavon Kirk, he's the guard. I'm actually going to go see them play Bolingbrook this week. I'm looking forward to that. You know, that's a program that turned over the coach. Luke Yaklich went to Illinois State, so they're kind of developing a new program. The Joliet grade schools didn't have basketball for a while, so I think that hurt some stuff. The population boom, you know, with Plainfield South is technically in Joliet. There's a lot of reasons and a lot of things that have happened in Joliet, so hopefully they can come back. But I think Central is definitely one to watch. It'll be fun to see what they can do with the Dipper, because I think that field is right there with them. I don't think there's a really great team there. I think they should be able to compete.
In the East Suburban Catholic Conference, it is a league that you couldn't, I don't think you could have a better couple of years than they've had the last 2 years with Marian Catholic and Tyler Euless, Sean O'Mara, and Bennett Academy finished second in the state. St. Viator was loaded. I mean, I don't know. They've had a great two-year run. And you look around, and geez, they're all of a sudden Marist, Notre Dame, St. Pat's, they're all unbeaten. St. Viator's 4-1 now. I'm not going to compare it to the last 2 years. It's nowhere near, anywhere near. But I think that the league's a little bit better than maybe I even thought it was going to be, at least here in the early going, particularly Niles Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm not Marist's schedule is embarrassing. So they're not even worth talking about at this point. Notre Dame, definitely, yeah. They're a team I wanted to rank badly in the Super 25, but for some reason I went with some other schools. I believed in Notre Dame. I think Joe Mooney, you know, he's a fun shooter. Mar Bakar is a great, great post player. Pats, I'm not so sure about. I need to see them some more. They've got a good point guard in Nick Coleman. Viator, yeah, I don't know. Their early season schedule wasn't great, and then they got pretty much whooped by Proviso E, so we'll see about them.
Yeah, the Proviso E score, I thought they'd be a little closer. I mean, they got a lot of change over at St. Viator. They still got a couple of guys to rely on, and Mark Filatico and Pat McNamara. But yeah, real quick on Mooney, Joe Mooney, I think he's one of the real unheralded players in the Chicago area. He had a terrific summer on the AAU circuit, and he's a shooter, and he's added more to his game. So he's going to be one to watch. And Notre Dame, I think, is the favorite in that league. Hey, your first look at Kenwood tonight. What'd you think?
Holy moly, they're intense. It's Marlo Finner and his guys. Wow. I mean, this game was like a city title semifinal or something in December. They need a little guard help, I think. They turned the ball over like 20 times. A lot of wildness on that. That's going to be an issue. You know, they got some kids with some talent at the guard spots, but not enough to really deal with the higher level public league teams, I think. As always, Nick Robinson impressed me. I really like his upside. And Manny Patterson, you know, got the job done. He could have had 20 points. He had a bit of a rough night. It could have been a little bit better. But yeah, they're going to be, I guess the thing I kind of saw was they're building a program there. That's not about this year. That's about becoming a legitimate threat for the next 10, 15 years. You can kind of see they're on their way.
Now, Kenwood has been talked about among a lot of public league people. Everybody throws around that sleeping giant loosely, but their location, what Kenwood has to offer, it is a program that is ready to take off. And it's going to be fun to see Marlo Finner instill what he wants to instill. You know, talking with Marlo Finner, I mean, it's going to be about toughness. It's going to be about playing with energy. And he is going to get that one way or the other, and it'll come along. But you're right, the point guard position, particularly at Kenwood, is going to be an ongoing question mark over the course of the year as they play the bigger and better teams in the city and throughout, you know, when we get into March.
I'm trying to think the last time I saw that many visiting fans in a public league gym. I mean, they must have brought 500 people. I mean, no joke. That just doesn't happen. I mean, a lot of times you're not allowed to go to see your team play in another gym in the public league. It's nice of King to let them come. But yeah, that's not a sleeping giant. That is a giant right now. When you can show up on a Monday night in King's gym with that many people, that was very impressive.
Real quick, we'll get into this a lot more in future podcasts. Holiday tournament time. Pontiac came out today. Proviso West came out today. Just real quick, looking at Pontiac, I don't think it's going to be as strong as we've seen in the past. Obviously, Simeon is there, so it elevates the entire tournament when you've got a team like that. But real quick, the top four seeds, Simeon was number one. Curie was number two. Unbeaten Plainfield North is number three. And then West Aurora is number four. So, I mean, I don't see it as strong. It's always pretty balanced after you get past the top teams. So it makes those first-round games and second-round games pretty entertaining. Your thoughts real quick on Pontiac?
It's pretty bad. I love the Pontiac tournament. I'll be there for every second of it. I'm sure some way, somehow, it'll manage to be magical because it always does. But, yeah, this is probably the worst field of teams in a long time. There's just not a lot there.
Proviso West gets back to, you know, gets away from the 32 teams and all that, which I never liked. I didn't enjoy it. I'm glad it's gone. The field has changed. The seeds came out in the pairings. Just kind of looking at the first round. I mean, I think one that jumps out at me is the Maine South uplift game, just because, again, two different types of teams and styles. And then we'd have if the brackets hold out, those quarterfinal matchups, you could be looking at Stevenson, Maine South, Kenwood versus the winner of Hinsdale Central, Proviso East. Rockford Auburn, which we talked about earlier, is one of the out of the Chicago area teams that one to watch, will be matched up against St. Viator. And then St. Rita and Hillman Flossmoor. Fenwick will play Hillcrest, and the winner of that one would get most likely St. Joe's in the second round. So you could see right now, on paper, a really intriguing championship game if everything panned out the way people would expect it to, which would be Stevenson and St. Joseph.
Joe, it's genius. Think about this. Get 32 teams in your holiday tournament. Keep them for a couple years. Then get rid of the ones you don't want. Only have 18, and it's a super strong field. I mean, it couldn't have worked out any better. Yeah, you look at these first round games, they're going to be great. They basically were able to get rid of the teams they didn't want, which, you know, there's a lot of talk about that. But yeah, it looks absolutely stacked. I mean, it is clearly, for the first time in a long time, Proviso West is clearly the top tournament, and it's just loaded. I mean, most of those first round games could go anyway. It is a shame that Morgan Park isn't there, because that would have been, you know, really great to get a chance to see Levette and Brunson. And
I'd like to see Bogan there, too. I would like to see Bogan and Morgan Park both there, actually.
Yeah, definitely. That would add a lot. But, no, it's great. I mean, I was kind of surprised. I didn't realize until I saw the pairings how loaded just the first round even was. It looks really good.
And one more thing before we get out of here for this episode. Next Sunday at Whitney Young, a big-time Chicago Public League. I don't even know what they're calling it, but
I asked and they wouldn't tell me. They don't know what they're calling it.
Well, maybe they'll reveal it. But no, I mean, the highlight of that one is obviously Simeon Morgan Park to wrap up the whole day at Whitney Young. But there are some really good matchups there too. Section, you know, red game matchups that'll be going on. Hyde Park's playing Kenwood and is one of them, or we'll play Whitney Young. We'll see if those two, you know, a lot different than a year ago, but it's just going to be one of the highlights, I think, of the early part of the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm a little torn about this event. I don't know what to think of it. I think it's a really good idea in a way, because all these games on one day is just overload of great basketball. These are some of the best matchups all season long, all shoved into one day. However, the sight of watching Morgan Park and Simeon play at Young just feels really weird. I mean, it'd be like holding the Big Ten title game, you know, in New York City. No, but I mean, yeah, you know, in an SEC town or something. It's really strange to me. I don't want it to be more observers. I don't want that. I want fans. I want the kids.
And that's
there.
The one game I like to pull out of the event and just have it separate in their own gym, in their own place, in their own time, in their own day.
You see, that part of the problem is a lot of people don't get to see that. People don't want to. There's been, you know, some incidents around it before. Sometimes they won't let certain people in. So, I mean, it will give the average fan in Chicago a really great chance to see Morgan Park and Simeon play. So that's one of the real benefits, I think, of this. We'll see how it goes.
We'll be out there next this Sunday, and we'll be ready to talk about it next Monday. And thanks for joining us on episode 3 of No Shot Clock Podcast.